for keeping it 99.
I stumbled on this photograph. It kind of made me laugh. It took me way back, back down memory lane.
You think,
oh yeah,
you're so goddamn.
Well, welcome to another new episode, another second episode this week of Keeping It 99.
Cool. Yeah, fuck you.
Your one-stop shop podcast for stuff and rolls.
And stuff, and look, we don't podcast for like 2 months. And then we're like, we'll give you two in a week.
Yeah.
You're fucking two in a week.
You're welcome, yeah. America.
Yeah.
My name is Eagle. I am joined by Rubber City Redbeard, and not just Rubber City Redbeard.
We have a guest!
A very special guest. Mr. Jared Chris from a band called Etched in Pain.
What's up, motherfuckers?
You're super jacked. I'm jealous. I wish I had work ethic.
What's funny is like he looked like us.
Yeah.
Like before he was this.
I remember.
He was us.
I remember.
How is that?
How do we go straight into this?
Like, because you look like that.
Everyone that listens to it is going to be like...
Because you look like a gorilla.
Fucking cocky-ass Jared's on there just talking about, you know, his fucking muscles and shit, you know? There's this cool thing going on, and we're talking about Jared's fucking muscles.
But don't have muscles.
It's hard not to talk about your muscles going around you, brother.
Don't have muscles. When's the last time you walked into a room? Which we know you have, because you have all those muscles. When's the last time you walked into a room and that wasn't like the subject? He's not a giant or anything. I mean, he's not like freakishly big. He's not fucking Big Papa Pump or nothing. But he's a gorilla. He walks funny. He's so big.
Is that the goal? Is Big Papa Pump the goal? Is that the end game?
No, the goal was Bane.
Nice.
That wasn't the goal. The goal was to have bigger traps than Tom Hardy in that movie.
I think you achieved that.
I did at one point, but now I'm just fat again.
Yay! You ain't fat. So we're here. We're talking. There's a special announcement being made today.
Today.
Today on the internets, and this podcast happens to be located on the internets. And so we are coinciding with an awesome show announcement. It's coming. I mean, you got 5 months. Yes. 5 months.
What's the date?
October 20th.
20th. The day before my birthday. It's not even a special birthday, though. Like, my 40th was last year, so I turned 41 this year, which is... That's like, hey, we know you get fingers in your butt on a regular from your doctor. So, yes, October 20th, there's a huge show. Who's headlining?
Oh, you know, just a little band called Hate Theory.
Oh! Yes, sir. Bam! Yes, sir. Yeah! Yeah!
Yeah, they were going to do something, and they weren't sure around then, and there was a show that happened a while back that we had a lot of fun at, and... You know, we just kind of reached out to see what they were doing, and we just put together a killer lineup. And
is that what it was? Like you heard about the show happening, and you're like, we want to do that?
No. Actually, they weren't sure what they were going to do. Actually, this is exactly how it happened. So, Etched in Pain did the show with Caligo. We had like a great time, killer response, and that was supposed to be it. We're never doing it again. Of course, the next day...
Except for you were in front of, like, fucking 350 people.
Which is,
and
like... Which really is, like, addictive. Crystal meth.
Exactly.
I'm gonna do this once.
So I'm just gonna do it one time, and then you're like, that was the greatest blowjob I've ever had in my life.
Yeah, so the next... It took like, 12 hours for a couple people in the band to say, hey, let's take that Never label off, and maybe we should do this again sometime. And then we started talking about, well... Maybe if this band, maybe if that band, but it would be super rare. So, like, just to kill all of it, I reached out to Brian, who handles Hate Theory stuff,
Mr. Latman, who's the
because
the
Hate Theory was
of,
pretty much the only band that we were all in agreement on. We're like, dude, if we could do it with Hate Theory again, because they were one of the bands we were lucky when we started our band that we were either friends or we knew all the bigger bands in the area, you know what I mean? So we weren't even a band didn't even play a show, and we had already booked a show with Hate Theory, Caligo, NDE, and Twitch. Like, we had four shows booked, and those were the bigger bands.
Twitch.
But we only played that one show with Hate Theory, but we'd always been, like, really good friends with them and all that. So anyways, I go to Brian, I was like, hey, what do you think of this? You know, maybe I was doing a show with Hate Theory, like... And, you know, Brian was like, well, dude, you guys really killed it. You guys could do your own show. I was like, yeah, we don't fucking want to. It's not about that. It's about, like, a big show for the scene, like, you know, that big nostalgia night. And he was like, well, I'll see what we can do. And,
You kind of sound like Brian.
So anyways, he was like, well, they're thinking about doing a show, you know, maybe in, like, October. I was like, dude, if we're going to do it, that's perfect. It's far enough away. And then he got back to me and was like, absolutely, let's do it. And then, you know, we kind of put the rest of the lineup. We were thinking, hey, what's some other bands from back then that we could put on? And my first thought is Skinny Tree, because, you know, Sean did Justin Timberlake with us.
I wanted that to come back for the Caligo show. Like, I wanted Skinny Tree on the Caligo show.
I tried.
I thought that they should have been there more so than other bands, because they were from then. Like, Skinny Tree was from that time in the local Akron,
yeah,
Kensington.
And we're talking about the early 2000s for people listening.
Yeah.
So I tried for that show. I didn't reach out to them, but Finn Frock was looking for some other bands, and I mentioned them, and then he had already reached out to some other bands, so those bands confirmed, and we never went any further with it. So I think Skinny Tree got duped into being on this show, though, to be honest.
How do you trick somebody onto
the
show?
I knew Sean would do it, right? So I had some contact with Sean. I was like, dude, Skinny Tree. He was like, I would, but I just, you know, I don't think the other guys or whatever. So our drummer, Nick, was in their band. And I mentioned to Nick when this all came about, hey, let's get Skinny Tree. And he's, you know, he's just thinking, oh, it's a lot more work. Like, we just went through this with Etched in Pain, learning all the songs.
Dude, I got my calves thing.
Mark, our guitar player that's, you know, basically filling in for Lyle, you know, he is friends with all of them. And he's like, oh, well, Nick, it's for sure. Josh Salad's going to do it. You know, he already said yes, and the other guys already said yes, so you don't have a choice, Nick. And so then Nick says yes, right? And then, so Sean says yes, and then Mark had said that Josh and Joe had said yes, but I really don't think they did. So then I sent them all a group message and was like, hey, there's this date, do you guys want to play it? And it came down to, like, I think they were all duped into thinking everyone else already
said yes.
So they all just were like, well, I guess it's yes.
Well, if you're doing it, I'm doing it. Yeah, if you're doing it, I'm doing it.
And I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's how that went. So
that's a brilliant.
So then we got Skinny Tree on there. And then Brian and I were trying to think of some other bands, you know, that would be killer for the lineup, but also, you know, from back then. And I have always been a fan of Kitchen Knife.
Kitchen Knife Conspiracy. Yeah. 20 years, man.
I love them as a band, right? Like, I always love going to their shows. I hated their singer for one reason, and that was because he always did that fucking dickhead, I'm going to throw a pitcher of water on the fucking floor, even though I'm the opening band. Yeah, I'm just going to fuck it up for the rest of the night for everybody. So, yeah.
Yeah, but he was awesome. I don't care.
I care! That was what I did. I'm not a musician.
I just remember...
So I fucking hit people.
I moved to Rootstown, you know, middle of high school. I didn't know anybody. I didn't have a car. There's nowhere. I can't go anywhere. And I meet Ryan Short, who's the other singer in Etched in Pain. And I get in this dude's car, and he has basically three CDs that are on repeat. I'd never heard any local bands, really. You know, I was like, into metal, but not quite this type of metal. And it was Funny, Okay. It was Hate Theory, and it was Kitchen Knife Conspiracy. And at first I was like, oh, man, what the hell is all this shit, you know? And, of course, me being, you know, you can tell from Etched in Pain, you know, I kind of went the route of funny a little bit more. You know, that was my style more. But Hate Theory and Kitchen Knife just kept growing on me and growing on me. And, like, those were the bands. Those are the bands that made me go, I want to be in a band. You know what I mean? With Kitchen Knife, especially. And then after seeing Hate Theory and Jeff just being so intense, I was like at first it was like, I just want to be in a band. And then I see Jeff and I was like, no, you know what? I want to be the singer in a band and be like, that dude is nuts. Well, yeah. I want people to look at me and be like, that dude's a badass, you know?
Just one of them dudes that come from a mold that was broken. You know,
yeah,
like that. He's apart from others.
He's so fucking intense. Like, you can see every vein about to burst out of his neck. And I mean, dude, I feel like so Jeff was gonna do this thing when Etched in Pain and Caligo played, and he got hung up and couldn't make it or whatever. But yeah, he was gonna like do this song with us. And me and Ryan both just looked at each other like, this dude's going to make us look like pussies. Like, what are we... I mean...
Yeah, you got two singers in your band, and then you want to add a third for, like, a guest spot, and he's going to crush...
And he's just going to make us look like little girls. Yeah.
Just go before him.
Let him have the last verse. Just shut it down.
Just shut it down. Like, here, after you pick up that microphone, we're done. Like, it's over. Because we're not even going to attempt to sound anything but little girls after that. You know, like, it's just... It's all bad after that. But yeah, so Kitchen Knife, I reached out to those guys, and, you know, first words out of their mouth was, dude, we'd love to play with our brothers in Hate Theory again. So, you know, we worked that out to get them on, and then that left one spot, and we had this idea of, we're going to find, you know, the scene used to be so huge back then. It's just so different, and, like, you and I both working at the Outpost, it's always like... I talk to local bands, and I'm like, dude, you guys, you know, when it was huge, it was always, we're telling stories, like, dude,
all the time, you know? Yeah. We always revert back to the fucking, back in our day.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me tell you something, Sonny. Sit down, I got stories.
I remember back then when other bands would, like, try and tell us things that we were doing wrong, and I would be like, ah, you don't fucking know, you know, and, like, so I feel like I'm that guy when I talk to those bands, and I'm like, certain just nuanced bullshit, like, where guys don't, they're not at shows anymore, they're not passing out flyers, bands are playing every single weekend at the same place, and it's like, dude, stop doing that. Like, no one wants to see you, I don't care how good you are. If Hate Theory plays every single weekend at the same club, the crowd's going to die off, you know what I mean?
It was the death of Funny.
Yeah.
Like, as you mentioned Funny earlier, and Funny was a band that sold out 400 or 500 seats anytime they would play. I mean, they had a really strong following, but then it came down to they were playing every weekend, and it was like the same three bars, and there slowly it just got down to 30 people. But yeah, those guys would play, and it's like, you know, if you would have just played twice a year, you would have kept that.
Dude, someone told us that back in the day, actually was Bonk. Somebody from Bonk was like, dude, you guys draw a big crowd, you guys, you know, just all this good shit about us, right? And they're like, but man, you play too much.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, at the end, that's what it was. I mean, I remember at the Robin Hood, we played there like four times in probably 8 weeks, you know? And like, at that last time, there it was maybe, you know, we were used to packing that place, you know? And the last time, there was like 100 people there, tops, you know?
Right.
And so anyways, with the way the scene is now, we're like, you know... There are really good bands, you know. People just don't go to shows like they used to, and these bands don't get in front of big crowds, you know. And one of the bands you guys mentioned multiple times, and me and Brian Lattman listened to, and we were looking at a bunch of different bands, you know. And you guys always talk about and play Sweaty Mammoth.
Kids are good.
Those dudes just confirmed to be on the show tomorrow, so it's going to be from top to bottom a killer lineup, ending with, I mean, in our area, the biggest, the best fucking local band from, you know, Kent, Akron. I mean, Hate Theory. There's nothing better than that. You know what I mean? Like,
it's like you can't go back and re-experience the Hate Theory shows of yesterday. But those shows were amazing. Like I met you at like a Hate Theory show.
Oh yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And you were, I don't know, you know, how old were you back then?
17, 16.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is what's funny, right? Like, because he lived in Akron too. You lived in Akron,
mm-hmm.
right? Like Firestone ish, yeah. right? So, but he also lived in Roostown. I came from Roostown to Akron, like Kenmore-ish, and then, but I grew up with Jeff Fall in Roostown, and then, but I know you from Hate Theory in Kent, but then you're also from Firestone Park and lived on the same street as, like, my best friend. It was a very weird...
Maybe it's because you're so old that we didn't run into each other. Maybe. But then again, I ran into Buddy, and...
I remember you at the Robin Hood in the pits.
Yes, that's what I was known for, being a drunken asshole in the mosh pit.
Yeah.
I think a lot of us were at that time.
Dude, the scene back then, it wasn't, it was like, it didn't even matter who was playing, it was that there's a show this weekend and we're going.
Yeah.
Like, and we're going to get drunk, we're going to get in the mosh pit, possibly fight somebody because people are going to be pissed. You know, another big thing, like, that I tell people about, like, why the scene was, and you guys hit on it when you had Josh on the show, girls. You know, if you have girls at shows, then guys come. And back then, you know, between the Caligo guys, us, Twitch, there was just so many bands that had even just a small group of girls that it ended up being, like, at least a third of these shows were girls, which guys flocked to every weekend, even if it was... Right. Even if it wasn't a great band, it was like, dude, this is the place to be. The show is a place to be. You know what I mean? There's a mosh pit, there's females, and we're going to get drunk.
It's like with Caligo shows back then. Like, the females were like high school chicks.
Yeah.
Well, they were in high school.
Dude, when we played our first show, I don't think our guitar player was even in high school. I think he was 13 or 14 years old.
Yeah.
I met this kid. Dylan Roth is how I met him. Right? We were at this party, and there's this kid in the corner... literally inside of a box with a 4-foot blue mohawk, like, wasted, and he looked like he was 12, and Dylan Roth was like, that's one of the greatest guitar players I've ever heard. And I was like, yeah, you're full of shit. And then I knew Nick Citrone and Matt, Kayla, our bass player, and they were like, hey, come try out for our band. And I walk into this garage, and there's the kid with the 4-foot mohawk, and I was like, oh, shit, man. And then sure as shit, they started playing, I was like, and that's a whole nother story, but it just clicked pretty well, well enough that they were like, hey, you guys want to play a show on Friday? This was like Monday. We were like, whatever. Yeah. But back then, I mean, we weren't even old enough. So yeah, girls from high school was normal because there were such young people in the in the scene. You know what I mean?
Oh, I specifically remember 16-year-old girls like jocking Mr. Clark.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I would have to swat them away, like, no!
Yeah,
You're gonna get my friend put in jail! No!
Didn't Caligo play a show, like, right after homecoming or prom, where they came and, like, half the band was wearing tuxedos?
Was that Robin Hood?
I think that was at the Voodoo.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it might have been the
Voodoo. I think it was the Robin Hood, because Sean, the painter, showed up in his tux at Robin Hood.
See, I'm recalling Little Josh. Maybe it was too different. I mean,
they went to Little Josh didn't go to the same high school as them.
Yeah, and Josh was from out like Akron way, right?
Yeah, I think he went to Ellet with Dylan, or somewhere in Akron, and then the rest of them all went to Roosevelt and Kent.
Yeah.
So they may have done that multiple times, but I do remember Sham or Sean, whatever.
Sham.
Being in a tux after something like that. So yeah, high school, you know, and then
he could have been in a tux on a Tuesday just because.
Yeah.
He's fucking Sham.
He's a unique. He's like, you know what? Artist.
I found this at Goodwill and I was like, I'm gonna give it a try.
Yeah. I'm gonna
give it a go.
You know what I always liked about girls, when there's a good amount of girls at the metal and hardcore shows back in the day, was they would have some of the better fights of the evening.
Yes.
Like, girls?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my god, they hated the fuck out of each other, and it was like, you would see dudes get drunk, or just like, you know, that guy knocked over my fucking beer in a pit, and you're just like, oh shit, we should all fuck him up, and it's like, it would be some stupid little fight. Girls were fucking vengeful, like, vengeful at each other, like, this bitch in the fucking bath. I remember Jessica always being like, I don't like this bitch in the bathroom, I'm like, what happened? She's like, it doesn't even matter. It doesn't even matter.
Which means,
but if she gets which means it's pit, nothing. I'm fucking her up. Yeah. I'm like, what? What am I? An hour long of that.
See, we had girls like Missy Albright. Do you remember Missy? Melissa Albright?
I think so.
Missy was, she was kind of taller, skinnier chick, but she was always in the pit with us, especially at the Robin Hood. Like, that chick was brutal.
That's how,
brutal!
Dude, Sarah McPhee was probably 13 or 14 back then, but she was always, like, a real tall girl, you know, right. 13 or 14, and, like, and she was really timid and really quiet back then, but she would just get in the pit, and, like, you'd think she was a dude, just knocking people around, and it was like, this is sweet, you know? And then I think most of the time the hating thing came, it would be like those chicks that got in there pitted like dudes, and then there'd be like the chicks that thought they were going to get in and it was going to be a little dance around, and all of a sudden they're getting slammed around. And, you know, then everybody's getting all catty and whatever. It was fun, though.
I've seen many of girls get tossed at shows because they just thought they were, let's get in there and have some fun. It's going to bounce around. No. I watched Buddy throw a chick across the room. Like a bowling ball, like she, that girl slid 20 feet probably, and that was at the Summerfest with Odious Sanction, one of the greatest bands from Ohio.
Ever. Such a good band,
dude. Yeah, those dudes. I think one of our first shows was with them.
Really?
Yeah, they still were around for a few years into us playing. Actually, I just seen something about them playing a show at the Odeon.
Okay, now see we
Odeon Sanction.
Odeon, yeah.
Are they playing with Crypt Kicker? Crypt Kicker keeps playing the Odeon.
I keep seeing Crypt Kicker playing shows now, too. There's so many bands from back then that, like,
well, they got to do something. Yeah, but a lot of those guys, and I'm not going to say Odious is in this pile, but Crypt Kicker for sure. Like, those guys are like, we got to do something because
the factory job's fucking me up.
Arthritis is setting in. I fucking hate my life. I'm literally living in a world of ghosts because everybody around me is about to die.
Oh.
So what's the total lineup for this show on October 20th? Then it's Hate Theory, Etched in Pain,
Skinny Tree,
Kitchen Knife Conspiracy,
and Sweaty Mammoth.
That lineup is fucking
a 5-band bill. It's the best.
Yeah,
5 is the best.
Yeah,
it's
here to here.
Yeah, it's the
perfect,
one stage. Well, you know, I hate when it's two stages and everybody just, you know, trying to, like, you can't even check out all the bands when it's two stages, because half the time, like, this one's last song is playing while this one's first song is playing.
Right.
And I always say, you know, working at the outpost doing security, I hated it because it was like, I literally just have to walk back and forth over here and, like, I don't know, dude. I just hate when there's more. 5 bands is perfect. 5 bands is.
You hate cardio. You know, like, anything has to do with your legs moving, right?
Yes.
Well, I don't want to walk from here to here.
Dude, I need to do some cardio. Let me do it at the at our show. You know, I knew it was going to kind of be, you know, kind of tough, but, like, so when we were done playing, I was so drenched in sweat that I was going up this ladder to get down the camera for Carly.
This is the Coligo show, right?
Yeah. So I'm getting the camera so she can switch the battery out and film. She filmed our set, and then she was going to film Coligo's. And I could see all this sweat just pouring off me, so I just stuck my head over top of her and, like, just I'm letting it drip all over. And she's, like, looking around trying to figure out where the roof is leaking, and, like, it's just pouring off me. My shorts, I looked like I pissed myself. And she was like, what is that? I was like, that's my sweat. She was like, you nasty motherfucker. She was so pissed. And I love you, Carly. Love you.
How crazy is that, though? Because you're probably in the best shape you've ever been in your life.
I don't do cardio, though. Yeah. So fuck cardio and fuck talking about what kind of shape I'm in. But
I'm going to keep it going. Keep bringing it back.
Yeah, I think we're not bringing that one back.
So fuck me, what about a Stone? That motherfucker's a beast too, you know?
Stone was like, you know, he was a rotund gentleman back in the day. And, like, I always tell the story about how he was the fat kid from Suffield, and I was the fat kid in Brimfield, and when we were young, like, the two yearbooks were combined, and we look alike. Like, we look like we're related and shit. So his parents would be like, oh, kid, your brother in Brimfield. And then my parents would be like, your brother in Suffield. And then, you know, fast forward 20 years and, you know, Hate Theory, we meet each other. And, yeah, he's, you know.
Yeah. I mean,
dude, it's 10 years ago, probably, he started that little journey.
Yeah.
And
maybe a little bit longer. I remember seeing him in Kent when Hate Theory was like, they were, I don't think that they ever like called it quits, but they were like kind of done doing what they were doing for a while. I don't remember if they ever was like, all right, we're done. But I remember seeing him all the time, like running through Kent. And Etched in Pain was still playing. So I want to say maybe 12 years ago or something, 13 years ago, he started that, you know? But he's maintained, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, yeah, absolutely.
He's maintained. He's a beast, you know? Like, and that dude, even when he was that big, that's the thing, like, I think him and I were a lot alike in that. Even when we were both just sloppy fat, like, on stage, we acted like we weren't, you know what I mean? And, like, so now him, I just went and seen Burn Blue Sky. And, like, he didn't even set his gear up on the stage. He set it up in the crowd at Buzzbin and just, like, going nuts in the crowd. Like, I mean, I don't know where that dude... I don't do any cardio, so I don't have the energy that guy has. I'm like, this dude is fucking nuts, man. But I love it. Like, that's what I want to see. I'm not... I've never been, like, a... Machine Head is one of my favorite bands. Like, yeah. They just... I don't... It's something about when I was growing up, you know.
They had a song.
Hate them, whatever.
They had a song.
Anyways,
yeah, that one.
I'll never go see them live because they just fucking stand there, you know, like, yeah. But there's bands that maybe on album I don't like quite as much, but I'll go see them every time because they just fucking go nuts live, you know what I mean? Like, and Stone is like, you don't even care what that dude's playing on guitar, not that I mean he's a fucking monster, but he's just fucking going nuts. It's like, yes, this is what a show
needs. I think like Slipknot and Dillinger Escape Plan and bands like those at that time kind of like they really introduced the whole like the entire band's gonna jump and go crazy,
yes,
and fucking bonkers, because I don't recall that being like a thing in like the early 90s. Like maybe you'd see Phil and Sal. Well, I guess Dimebag Darrell, I mean really Pantera, I guess kind of had a... They moved around. They ran around the stage, but it was kind of like more like Iron Maiden does, where they're just like, I'm on this side of the stage jamming on guitar. Now I'm over here, and I'm looking you in the eye. Here's a guitar pick. Now you. But like bands like Dillinger are like, we're all just going to jump out. I might beat you with a fucking guitar. And from the early 2000s in the metal scene, like I remember like a lot of bands like Etched in Pain and Caligo, like you guys really kind of brought that to the... Dead Even is a great example of a band that was just... fucking wild.
That's all I gave a shit about back then. It was like, I remember like punching dudes in our band if they weren't moving. Like I back then, people used to ask us all the time like how we even played shows because we were notoriously just trashed, and like it was because we didn't give a shit really about the show. Like we did, but it was like more about putting on a show.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, I wasn't so much concerned with how my voice sounded or, you know, if I was so drunk that I was singing the wrong song. It was more about, we're about to fuck shit up. We are coming in here and we're going to have a mosh pit on stage. And, like, if dudes in my band weren't moving, I remember one time specifically just reaching back and just blasting our bass player in the chest. And, like, I don't think he ever didn't move after that. You know what I mean? It was like, okay, we have to do this. So bands like when Caligo was doing it, and especially if we were playing with Dead Even or Caligo or, of course, Hate Theory, because Jeff is just fucking, I mean, he may not be, like, jumping around and doing all the crazy shit that everyone else does, but he's just so fucking intense. Like, everything is at 110% the whole fucking show.
Just
with that
the way
guy.
He moves his neck. Like, he can stand still and move, like, 50 different times within a minute, and you're like, he's still standing still, but every body part, it's like his limbs come out, and he just...
Yes.
This is the weirdest poses. You ever try taking pictures of Jeff Fall when he's doing a show? Like, they all come out, like, crazy good different poses.
Yeah, I got pictures from the Pillow Humpers practice spot back in the day, and they were all, like, really good shots.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you could have put them in magazines, probably.
Dude, you would make a killing if you just, you know, had magazine pictures. You know, basically put a magazine of all the pictures you had from bands back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Just like a yearbook.
I wish I had a lot of the stuff that I had back in the day, because I don't have a lot of that stuff anymore. A lot of that stuff's just gone. I've moved so many times, I've lost a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I do things like, I don't keep things. I've moved so many times in my life that, like, I just don't keep things. Like, I don't really collect anything, because it's like, I just got to the point where it's like, as a kid and, like, my early adulthood, I moved so much that I didn't want to have to pack things up and move, so I just never really was a guy to hang on to much at all. You know what I mean? Like
vagina. You're like, that's like that. I need that.
Yes, yes. That's that's about it.
I just need vagina. Vagina, and I have a bike, and I work out.
and I work a lot. But I can take days off to ride my motorcycle and podcast like with old men.
Like today.
Yeah.
Stay with old men.
Yeah.
Son of a bitch.
Yes.
That's fine.
So, my idea when we were thinking of more bands, but I just remember the look I got from Eagle was after we played, I remember saying, when is fucking Crush Groove playing? When is Crush Groove going to do a show?
I don't know, man. Never? Probably. Like, I still hang out with those dudes and shit, but, like, I don't think there's really a demand for it. And, I mean, if Tripp and Richie were like, we want to go do this thing, like, I'd probably do it just based off of, like, well, I guess I'd have to. But, like,
there's not a want there for you? There's not a want to there for you? You don't want to do Crush Groove ever again?
It's not that I don't want to. I just I don't know. I'm cool with doing this. I like doing this.
Oh, I know you do.
I think like so.
Like so and also the, like we never really fit in anyway. We're like too silly.
Yeah, but I think everybody loved really that. Like on the when you had, I think it was when you had Fern. I don't know. One time you mentioned something about you guys played with us, and I was like, "Where the fuck are the strippers?"
Yeah, you were mad.
I think you took it like. This dude fucking thinks our band sucks, but there's going to be naked girls. Like,
right, well, that was the feeling I had a lot of the time.
If it was an Etched in Pain show, or I had any part in putting somebody on the show, back in the day, that was the one thing. Like, if I thought your band sucked, I was never in a million years going to put you on a show, whether it was our show, or whether, I was just kind of one of those dudes that I would totally be like, yeah, man, you guys are cool, you know what I mean? But, like, when it came down to, like, if I was booking a show and you were like, hey, let's play a show with you, I'd be like, ah, oh, get a hold of you, you know, man, you know what I mean?
Ah, we got a thing. There's a thing.
That was, even, like, this show, like, I wanted it to be a fucking killer from top to bottom. That's what I always tried to do. Our very last show was one of the most killer fucking lineups. It was, I didn't even know what to do with the bands because all the bands were like, dude, you're going to make us fucking open? And I was like, I don't know what to do here, man. Like,
somebody's got to do it.
Somebody's got to do it. And it was like Skies Bleed Black, which was pretty big back in, you know, yeah, back then. Kill Franklin, Kitchen Knife Conspiracy.
If you could get Kill Franklin, fuck.
Well, they were supposed to do that last one. And, you know, whatever happened with the guitar player had surgery.
Yeah, Eric had
the
shoulder surgery.
Couldn't do
shit.
It all.
Yeah.
They did tell me that night at the show that Kill Franklin is going to be doing something, a show, sometime this year.
Oh, shit.
They are going to do a show. But, like, yeah, back then, we had a band from New York, End Face, they played. But, yeah, it was like, well, these dudes drove from New York, so I can't make them open. Am I really going to... I think Kill Franklin ended up opening. Like, they just kind of volunteered it, because I was like...
Yeah.
The day of the show, I was kind of like, I don't know what to do here. yeah, so that's how, you know... So, no, dude... I totally wanted to see strippers at the show, but I totally wanted Crush Groove on that motherfucker, too.
I remember, I think for the most part, like, all the right people liked your guys' band.
Yeah, yeah. We were, like, dudes in other bands liked us, but their fans didn't give a shit.
To take you guys,
yeah, well, they were just like, they're talking about how fat they are for 5 minutes up there. And then they did a 2-minute song and he went right back into this whole, like, oh my god, I'm out of shape. Because I would just, like, pass out on stage, like, on purpose. It was like being a showman. Like, I would just... because I would come up with a bit. Like, what we would do is Tripp and I would come up with a bit, but not tell the other band guys what the bit was. And we're like, we're going to do it for the whole show. And, yeah, like, I think other bands liked us because... We were different enough, but, like, honestly, like, we were just, like, a rap metal, like, the early 2000s, you gotta remember, it was, like, Korn and Limp Bizkit were the shit, and I hated Limp Bizkit come that second album, but,
yeah.
And so we were like, we need to start getting heavier and heavier, so we were trying to fit in with the NDEs and the Hate Theories and stuff, and then it just, you know. That didn't work out. It just didn't work out.
You can't really curve that into an NDE Hate Theory thing, though. You can't take what Crush Groove is and then try to bend it to kind of
Edgerton Payne tried that.
We were young. Yeah. Well, we were young, and so it was kind of like with Caligo when they didn't want to use the painter anymore because we don't want to be known as the band with the painter. But yeah. It's like that's what your thing was. And there was a time where we were young, and I was like, I'm an artist, and I'm sick and tired of being taken as a joke, even though I'm like the whole thing was a fucking joke. You know, when I look back on it now, I'm like, oh, that was so stupid. You should have kept strippers. You should have got uglier strippers. Because we did. Our strippers went from, like, A-plus strippers to, like, D-minus, like, barely passing strippers. Real quick. And I was like, we should just go all out and get worse strippers.
Remember a time, like, me and Big Joe being like,
it's super hard. Like you said, you guys were, like, the rap metal, but then you wanted to try and get heavier. I think it's super hard to, like, just... For a local band to just kind of like, we're going to do this other thing. Like, Edgerton Payne was like 7-string drop A or whatever. I'm not a guitar guy, but so, and it, I mean, dude, there's no way around. Like, here's what made the singing anyways different is like, me and Ryan have completely different styles. Like, that dude's like got that death metal, you know, just deep, almost like trying to sound like Jeff Falsor. And I don't have that at all. Like, I'm a front man who, you know, I can hype up the crowd. I can do all that, and I can kind of scream, but it's, like, kind of rappy, kind of this, that. So, one time, I don't know, they could have just been getting sick of me back then. I was kind of, you know, a really big asshole.
You were a dick.
I was a drug-fueled asshole.
Yeah, no, like, you were, because you're sober now.
Yes.
And you're how sober?
Like, 8 years stone-cold sober.
Amazing.
Congrats.
That is amazing.
So, but back then they were like, I came to practice one day and they were like, so we changed some things, dude. So, we're going to change everything up. And at this point, like, dude, our first 6 months, we were the worst band ever. Like, we didn't even have lyrics. We fucking sucked. But we just kept playing shows. But anyways, like, at this point we had, like, you know, if we could draw a crowd and do all that, and they're like, oh, so yeah, we're changing stuff, we need to be heavier, we need to do this, we need to, and I was like, but that's not what we are, and that's not who comes to see us, like, what are you guys doing? They're like, don't worry about it, we already rewrote all the songs, so,
I'm like,
wait, okay, well, let's hear it. So then they break out 6-string guitars, like, drop D, and start playing, like, this fucking, our songs, but almost, like, speed metal style, and I was like, I don't even know what to do. Like, I can barely even recognize anything going on. So, like, these are different songs. Like, I don't know what to do with this. And I was like, if this is what we're doing, I'm kind of like, I hate this. I'm fucking out. Like, I don't know what to do, man. And I, looking back, I think that was kind of the mode there. They're like, yes, get the fuck out.
They're writing you out of the story.
Yeah, yeah. And but I don't think so. There's like a whole story. Like when I went to go try out for the band, they weren't looking for 2 singers. Ryan had no clue what he was doing. Like, I just was like, hey, I'm going to try out for this band, you should come with me. And, like, he thought he was just kind of riding along. Well, me and Ryan used to do this, like, we would get drunk in my basement, put on a CD, and we would both just, like, scream through this PA. And and we never would tell each other what we were doing. We just always had, like, this mental connection of, like, all right, I'm going to stop here, you're going to go there, like, whatever, you know? And we did that forever. Well, anyway, so when I got to the band practice or whatever, I was like, hey, what do you guys think of 2 singers? And then Ryan, literally, you can see him shit himself. And he was like, what are you talking about? I was like, yeah, hook up a mic. And he was like, what? So anyways, I think when that direction went to kind of move away from rap metal Jared to, you know, heavier
more,
Ryan.
More metal
Ryan. Was like, wait, no, this is, I wasn't even supposed to be in this band. Like, I don't want to do this without him, you know? And like, end of the story is it all fucking dissolved, and it's just hard to completely change a band, like you were saying.
Yeah,
you know?
And I think at that time too, it's like, I know I saw the death of rap metal like right before it was happening, because Fred Durst fucking ruined it for everybody.
Yeah,
right?
He did.
He ruined it
he
for
did.
Everybody.
Yes, he did.
Because we were like, oh, we got the image, we got the attitude down, and then he's like, just break shit for whatever. And it's like, no, no, do it my way. It's like, oh.
Dude, speaking of,
rolling, of
Fred Durst, you know, I used to always wear, like, a red hat. And, like, so yeah, the Edgerton Payne show, Edgerton Payne and Caligo show, like, you know how many times I had to just close my eyes and be like, yeah, you know, like, the fucking, what's that, Bad Boys, woosah,
Yeah.
Everyone's like, dude, where the fuck's the red hat, dude? And I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ, man.
I'm known for the red hat.
Can we stop talking about the red hat? Like,
so how long was it in between the last Etched in Pain show and then the Caligo, the reunion show, the nostalgic
13 game? Years.
Wow. 13 holy shit. Fucking years.
Yes.
You guys did well that night. I mean, you guys fucking sounded really fun. Good. You killed the crowd. It was a good show.
It went off like, dude, us leading up to that and like the practices, like if you could have been a fly on the wall, you'd be like, so we practiced at the Outpost, and Joe, you know, was there, and I'm sure just at times Joe was like, people really used to come see this?
Yeah.
It was like, because we had no clue. We had to, like, try and, you know, remember all these songs, you know what I mean? And, like, and then, you know, it was just, for a while, for the first couple of practices, it was like, Jesus Christ, are we about to make fools of ourselves? Because this is not going well. And then it just started to click, you know, and then we did.
I mean, you're 13 years out, and you're like fucking two practices in. I don't know if we can fucking. Oh,
yeah,
dude,
we
don't really fucking sound right. It shouldn't.
Yeah, no.
You fucking got for fucking.
And then the sexy back that we did with Sean from Skinny Tree, that actually, Sean never practiced that with us until we did a sound check. Our sound check at that show was practicing that one time through with Sean, and like the end he. Me and him both just kind of like just did shit at the end, and he had a plan, and I was like, I'll just follow you, and we never even heard what he was gonna do, like when we added like the breakdown to the end of the song, and Sean's just all fucking creative and shit, you know, and he's like,
Like
it sounded like it was supposed to just go that way, and it was fucking perfect, you know, and it was, everything went really well, you know, whether throw everything out, like we I thought for sure, like there were certain songs, you know, like one song we completely rewrote the lyrics, and I thought, you know, being all honest, I'm like, oh, Ryan is gonna forget all this and fuck it all up. Good thing I'm really good at improvising. Ryan remembered it all, and I forgot it, but I remembered like the pattern, and I remember, you know what I mean, so like, not that anybody would have known, you know, it was 13 years and it was rewritten, but you know, there were just, it was tough after, you know, 13 years. Like, I forget Hate Theory, how long was it in between their shows? You know, I know they did a show like 45 years ago or something.
Yeah, I mean, they did a show back, it would have been 10 years ago, and they did a show for me, which was the McTerrion benefit when Josh got murdered. So they played that show, and then they didn't play a show after that. I mean, probably for another 4 years or so.
Yeah, there was like
it was a hefty gap.
And they do like some of their practice stuff with Stone is through Skype. You know what I mean? Because he's in DC. And
right, and then like because there was a time that, you know, like the Burn Blue Sky shit was happening, and then the Rue shit was happening. Yeah. Jeff was like doing Rue.
So I wonder if this is what when we were doing that, I knew. I kept asking dudes in Caligo how it was going for them, because it was like, man, this is starting off rough for us, you know? And I wonder if, I mean, dude, Hate Theory's always just been so damn tight. I remember thinking, like, you know, these other bands that have done it, I'm like, did they go through this same thing? Like, where everything, it was just like, why are we even doing this?
The Caligo guys, though, like, they didn't really keep in touch so much. They don't hang out with one another as to where, like, the Hate Theory guys have been together for fucking ever.
And
they hang out outside. They talk to each other outside.
And they all have other... I mean, like, a lot of those dudes are still... Like, they're in Burn Blue Sky together.
Right.
So, like, they've all been playing out still over the
Burn Blue Sky has a bunch of dudes from Hate Theory in it now.
Three.
Yeah. Right. And that dude... That's one of those, like, bands that they've been around this whole fucking time. And that band kills it every time. And...
Burn Blue Sky?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Those guys are fucking good.
If Jeff wasn't already doing a show that night, that would have been my, like, okay, like, let's get Burn Blue Sky on this, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I fucking love those dudes.
I would still love to just book an entire Jeff Fall tribute evening.
You know, maybe Jeff's voice. Yes,
Rue.
We just do. It starts off like
Pillow Humpers.
Those five bands right there.
Yeah.
Like, oh, can we do that? Can we get Jeff to do like
Night of Jeff Fall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Night of Jeff. A medley of Jeff Fall.
I think it would sell out. I don't know if Jeff's voice would make it, because, like I said, he's 110% monster from start to finish.
I've seen him pull off some pretty amazing things.
He probably can do it.
I've seen him pull off some pretty amazing
things. When it comes to vocals, it's like, that dude does it all.
He can come in with hair and a beard, and by the time Hate Theory plays, he can be just completely shaved and clean. You can see all the different stages of Jeff Fall.
Let's get on that. Let's just try and book this.
That's it.
Night of Jeff Fall.
We can put it on Valentine's Day, and we'll call the show I've Fallen for
you. Oh!
That's perfect.
Done.
Man.
Done.
We're making money over here.
I'm texting him as soon as we're done and asking if we can put this together.
It's like, look, we need to make this happen.
Jeff,
I'll buy as much honey and tea as he needs.
We're just going to build a shrine to you in the outpost somewhere.
A bronze statue. It's only going to be 7 inches tall because I don't make that much money. But it's going to be bronze.
Jeff Fall is the LeBron James of the Kent and Akron.
Yeah.
we are going to give him a statue. Look, that's what, you know, fucking... Hate Theory is the LeBron James of this area's music. You know
if I ever hit the lottery, if I was ever rich, I think I would do that. I would get a full-size Jeff Fall screaming into a microphone statue made, and then go put it in downtown Kent, like right on a corner across from the police station, like 3 a.m, just fucking drill that motherfucker into the concrete real quick. We'll make that shit happen.
Yes.
Don't let me get money. Yes. Don't let me get money. Stupid shit happens.
I still have to try to play it cool anytime I ever see Jeff Fall since we started the podcast. Like, he officially, like, he knows who I am when he sees me, and it weirds me out now because, like, for, I want to say 15 years, I've just been, like, a, you know, back-of-the-room fan of his, and anytime he's ever walked by, I'm like, it's always meeting him the first time. Like, hey, what's up, man? You're one of my favorite singers.
You're really good at what you do.
I went to the Burn Blue Sky show, so Jeff was supposed to do a thing with us at the Caligo show. Like, it's a long story, but we have a song that, like, I never thought, you know... Actually, as a matter of fact, one time Jeff told me, like, he really didn't like our band, you know? I mean, we're friends, you know what I mean? He was like, yeah, I don't really like you guys, but you guys fucking go crazy. And I think this one time he was a little messed up, and a part of our song kind of stuck out to him, right? So,
yeah.
And he had told me that a long time ago, and then one time when I'm working at the Outpost, he's all drunk, and he starts literally singing that song.
You're like, what is happening right now?
Wait, dude, fucking Jeff Falls, like, knows our song. Like, what the fuck? And he was like, dude, I need a copy of that, you know, like, he just loves the breakdown in one of our songs, so, you know, long story short, he was supposed to do it with us that night, but, you know, life happens and all that. Well, I went to the Burn Blue Sky show, and we, you know, of course, haven't announced this yet, and, like, I haven't seen him since he didn't show up to the show, because I literally found out as I'm walking on the stage, one of our mutual friends was like, hey, Jeff's not gonna make it, and I was like, oh, yeah, he was supposed to be here, fuck. So the first thing I say to him, I'm like, well, now you don't got a fucking choice, dude. Now you're going to have to deal with us. You know what I mean?
You're
going to
be in the same room all
night. Not ruin any surprises
night.
Or nothing, but I'm like, dude, you don't have a fucking choice. You got to be there. I'm like, so now you got to. He's like, yeah, dude, I get a second fucking chance. Like, I'm like, dude, it's, you don't have a choice. I'm going to, like, fucking hug his leg the whole night and, like, make him do it. But, like you said, we're going to have to figure out a way that we can just, like, drop the mic after that. Like,
make it last.
Jeff has spoken, and we're done.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Now, wasn't Edgerton Payne called Crawl Space before it was Edgerton Payne?
It was. Crawl Space was copywritten by a band in Ontario. So I didn't really. So when I joined the band, I was like, "What's Crawl Space?" And it was like, you know, like where John Wayne Gacy kept all the bodies. And I was like, "Well, yeah, okay, that sounds kind
of." It's also where some people just keep things like linens.
Yeah. But, so our bass player, and turns out like a bunch of dudes in our band, like, you know, are, you know, kind of like serial killers and stuff. So I was like, "Oh, whatever, yeah, that's a cool name." Well, then if you look at, so that band reached out or whatever, and we had to change our name because. They've done this to multiple bands. So Seven Dust, their original name was Crawl Space as well.
Really?
In the very first Mortal Kombat movie soundtrack, there's a band on there called Crawl Space. It is Seven Dust.
That's Crawl Space. Look at that!
The more you know, motherfucker.
Yeah,
well,
so...
Well, fun fact.
So this band from, like, the 80s copyrighted the band name Crawl Space. How they found out about a little band from Kent/Akron, like, that, like, I mean, it was maybe one or two shows into us, being a band, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know, but they reached out. I was like, hey, this has got to go.
Was Google a thing?
I don't think so, dude.
Oh, but, you know, look, because in the Trapped days, if you remember Trapped,
yeah,
the Trapped from California that did the whole Headstrong thing,
yeah,
got a hold of Trapped here in Kent, I mean, and was like, hey, you can't have that name.
I do remember there was, like, dial-up AOL, you know?
Yeah, me too. Me too.
So that's, I don't know if Google was around, but, yeah, and to be honest, I don't even know where the fuck our name came from, Etched in Pain. Like, I wanted it to be some, like, this is when I was getting into bands like Poison the Well and From Autumn to Ashes and shit like that. So I had, like, this really cool, like, long-ass fucking name. And they were like, dude, that could be, like, an entire album name or something. I was like, I don't care, dude. It's fucking sweet, dude. And they're like, eh,
I remember that was, like, the thing there for, like, a year or two where every band...
Like, really long-ass names. Like,
yeah.
You know what? Every time,
usually, it was usually three words. It was the three word bands and shit.
Right. It could be like the middle word was always like a two letter, like in or on or of.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I got my way.
You're the one that turned me on to Poison in the Well. Like, I never heard of those dudes before
That's just my favorite fucking band ever.
They were good back in the day.
That band was good back in the day. Amazing.
I wish that they would do some shows because last time they did, I flew to New York to see them. I will fly wherever I have to go, you know, to do that. But,
settle down, fanboy.
Dude, I have a sweet fucking Poison the Well tattoo.
He went to the tattoo. I was like, why is he gazing at his fucking bicep right now?
Why do we gotta talk about biceps?
You bring him back up.
You know, when I gaze at my bicep, they go, look at it, Eagle looking at his arm. When Jared does it, he's looking at a bicep.
When I'm looking at my bicep and shit, they're like, Grant must have something on him. Like a bug or something.
So, yeah, now that we're talking about muscles again, like the fucking biggest muscles in, you know, the fucking local scene, Hate Theory, is playing a fucking show on October 20th.
October 20th.
Nice segue.
Like, I love nostalgia, like, the whole, you know, the nostalgia kick shows, especially because, you know, our podcast started and then every band wanted to reunite for us. That's my belief. And I'm sticking with it.
Grant's the one that planted the seed for Etched in Pain. Like, I know that you guys, like, talked, and that's supposedly, you know, that as from my knowledge, you guys talked about Caligo on here, and then Finner was like, oh, they talked about us on there, we gotta fucking do it.
He also gave us all the credit.
So then...
Rightfully so.
I'm pretty sure we got Chimera back together.
I go in the outpost, and Grant's like, so, just out of the blue, he's like, so, what, you know, you guys, your band should, like, you know, do something. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about, dude? I was like, that would never happen. Ever. And, you know, and a bunch of crazy shit just happened to happen, like, where it was like, well, if this happens, I'll mention it. And, like, each time I said that, like, that would happen, I'm like, fuck! So it all came from, yes, Grant planting this fucking seed out of nowhere, like, hey, you're banned. I was thrown off. I was like, wait, where the fuck did this come from, dude? Like, why are we talking about this? So, what's the next, Crush Groove? Like, who else can we... You guys plant seeds that, like,
The ones that I want to get back to, like, the big one.
They won't,
but it's, like, the one that we dream about. Like, we go to bed at night.
Every night.
Dreaming.
About NDE.
We played one of our first shows with NDE. I would love to see
the greatest band in the scene.
Dude. And that's what...
So Greg Cook is, like, the best drummer around. Like, that... Greg is... He's a maniac when it comes to, like, that dude plays so solid. And I've seen him at his skinniest and his fattest, and he's just as good on either end. So you have no excuses, Greg Cook. You can't be like, oh, I haven't played in a while, I'm fat. Yeah. Bullshit!
Those dudes, so Crush Groove, NDE. Someone mentioned, someone in my band said, hey, dude, if we ever do this again, because we decided, like, after we did that, and it was like, well, this is our, you know, the only reunion show, so we're never gonna say never, but, like, for real, like, this may be, you know, it could be, it could not be, like, if another big kind of deal thing comes up, and it's like, oh, yeah, whatever, fuck it, let's do it,
yeah.
Like,
so, I mean, I definitely don't think you should, you know,
it's, there's just, we're not putting that never on there anymore, but, like, it would be, take something like that, though, it would take, like, a fucking NDE, like, dude, let's, yeah, dude, NDE, or, like, I'm trying to think of some other band. Like, my...
216 would be a great one.
That'd be cool to see them do a show.
That's not going to happen. That's never going to happen. That's never going to happen. Like, at least there's a shot for Indy. I really don't think, like, a 216 show with Gravy in the band, right. I don't see it happen. I want that to happen, though.
As much as it wouldn't happen, and so many people just dislike some of the guys in that band, one for me, well, there's two. Funny and Uncle No.
Uncle No!
If you get those two bands together...
Oh, yeah, that show sells out. That show sells out.
And Kent Dunn.
That show sells out.
Dunzo.
That show sells out.
It's going to be a bunch of fucking...
Uncle No was funny because, like, they were like... He was like, I really like Clutch, but I also really like all the new shit that's out.
I love Jonathan Davis.
Yeah.
That was one of the CDs when I remember, like, the first time outside of school that me and Ryan Short hung out, we, like, went to Eastwood Mall or something all the way in Warren.
Yeah.
And I had to hear Funny, Hate Theory, Uncle No.
Wasn't there a van on the cover of Uncle No's disc?
Yes.
It was a van, right?
Yep. Oh, I just remember.
This fucking stupid memory I have, right? Boys are trailer
park. whoa, this went from just kind of like this weird... sounding like a children, I don't know. Like it sounded like you should be on a merry-go-round to this dude screaming his ass off.
I always looked at him as like our local Korn, like before Korn was.
See, to me, Funny was that. Funny was. The
I
local
thought
Korn.
Funny
yeah.
too. Funny was fit for in me. Was the same. I thought they both kind of fit in the same.
In listen, the same I'm gonna realm. Leave here and listen to Funny now because every time it gets brought up, I like listen to that first CD and I'm like, God, I was so in love with that dude. I was
really cool with those dudes.
Gonna kick their singer's ass.
Their singer Jeff, was a cunt to me,
Jeff.
Dude.
Okay, now here's the thing about Jeff, right? Like that dude, Jeff was like the biggest fucking dickhead throughout the entire time that they were like drawing people, right? Like
yeah.
He really got an ego about himself and just he was the biggest fucking dude. Dick. And then towards the end, dude, when people started dropping off, I got to know that dude. He good fucking guy.
Yeah.
Solid dude. Like, really fucking nice. Yes, really fucking nice guy. Like, he was even kind of like, I know I was a dick. But he was a fucking dickhead.
Listen,
but he's not.
Speaking of all of Jeff Fall's bands, you know, I was wearing a Pillow Humper shirt, right? And this is when Funny was down to drawing, you know, 20, 30 people, you know? And I was still, like, going and checking out Funny shows. Like I said, I'd go to any shows. It didn't matter. But Funny was playing, and I think, In Harm's Way / Twitch was playing with them, and so luckily there was like Buddha and a couple other dudes to grab a hold of me. I don't even remember. I was just drunk, and I know, like, dude, I'm there singing every song with Funny. You know what I mean? Like, I'm at the top of my lungs, like I'm loving it. And I don't know for what reason the dude said something about my shirt, about Pillow Humpers, and they said something about my mom, and like,
ah!
I was like, what?
We're out of
this, dude.
Quickly.
And, like, I literally, like, charged at the stage, and it was, like, a couple of the dudes in Twitch, and maybe it might have been John from Kitchen Knife Conspiracy, because I think they played that night as well, like, all just grabbed me and was like, dude, what the hell? I was going to kick that dude's ass. At that moment, I was like, fuck Funny, fuck that band. And then they became Funny Cyrus, and then they disappeared. Makes the grip take hold, makes me fucking breathe like a metronome. And then I freak out, looking all about in my freestyles, looking all around, motherfucker around.
You see, NDE, like I was gonna say earlier, like I do enjoy the fact that a lot of the bigger bands from the local scene are getting back together now, and they're drawing crowds. I mean, Caligo drew a crowd. Hate Theory's return show drew a fucking huge fucking
sold out.
Which is nuts. And it's not just that it's like, oh, I get this touch of nostalgia, but it's like you guys are saying, because you guys are at the Outpost a lot. You guys are at these venues a lot, seeing not a lot of big crowds coming in. I'm like, man, if you get a band like NDE and you put a band like a younger band like Sweaty Mammoth or Black the Sun or Wall Creeper, these bands that deserve to play.
Yes. Wall Creeper on an NDE show would be great.
They would be so good. And that's, I think for me, like, that's why I really want to see some of these bands come back, because in my head, I'm like, they'll draw, and then they'll be able to help out these younger cats.
Yeah, that's a whole other audience.
Because, I mean... Today's promotion is completely different. You know
yep.
what I mean? Like, you have to have a Facebook page, and
yep.
you have to have this and that. And so it's like the whole idea of, like, what for us what DIY was and what worked for bands.
Going to shows, flyers,
driving to fucking Pittsburgh to fucking flyer for shows, driving to Columbus to flyer for shows.
We were playing in New York and we weren't sure how well Endface like did promoting up there.
Yeah.
So Chimera was playing up there like 2 weeks before we were playing up there.
Right.
So we all didn't have nothing to do. We drove to Buffalo, New York to stand outside this fucking the Continental in Buffalo, New York and promote a show up there. Like, that's, we were busting our ass.
Look, these dudes nowadays, like the younger cast nowadays, they'll never know that type of the work that had to go into your band back then. Yeah. Because these guys are really lazy about their shit nowadays compared to
speaking.
Put it on
Facebook. Compared to coming. So, with putting Sweaty Mammoth, there were a couple other bands that we had talked about. Defy Reality.
Those guys.
The Party is a good band.
Party's amazing.
If they hadn't just played with us in the Caligo, like, we were looking for, so Curse Them is really badass, but they just did, I think they did the Hate Theory show, and they did the show with us in Caligo.
Right.
Did that, so we're kind of, like, looking, like, what are some other bands, you know? Like I said, My Life's Burden, they opened up the last show, and there was still, like, 200, 250 people for the opening band. So if we get a really good band that can start... What I would love to see, and Brian's still, he's not in bands at the moment, but like he still does with all the promotions with CB Entertainment and all that stuff. Yeah, sure. He is really good at all that. And so him being still involved in the local scene, and you know, as much as Grant and time we spend at like local shows and at the Outpost, I would, if the only thing good that would have come out of Caligo or Eschen Payne ever doing a show or these bigger bands is if we could get some good local bands to build up some steam and get that music scene back to how it was.
Yeah.
That was like the whole point of like, we could have just done all old bands. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like we could have cut it off at four or got another old band somehow on there. And it was like, well, let's get a young band that just... is really good that might not get in front of a big crowd. Hopefully we can help them build up some steam and then maybe the scene is built back up how it used to be. You know what I mean? The kids now, they're like, dude, I don't even know what that's like, man. And it's like, you gotta work your ass off. But dude, it's the best, like the big local scene from back then was like, it's like, we're going to be 50 and 60 years old, like, and if it's still not back to that, we're still going to be, like, telling stories about it. You know,
I'm
going to
tell
those
stories till I'm dead.
Yeah, but like, it's going to seem like it's all lies if the scene doesn't ever get
Yeah, exactly.
It's a myth. Like,
yeah, that's a myth. That never
happened. Well, I think when Hate Theory did their reunion show, which was also extra cool because that came with an album. They were like, we're not just doing a reunion show. Like, we're a band. We're solidly back.
I forgot about that. Yeah, we're doing that too.
What?
So we are finishing up. So we started recording an album 14, 15 years ago. And so we got through two songs. I mean, we recorded like, I think a total of four or five we finished. One we didn't put out, and thankfully, like, we may for this next show, like, I may just completely rewrite it. Like, there's been some things that went on in my life where I just can't possibly do this song because of the lyrical content, so we may just completely revamp that song. We're trying to possibly get our original guitar player, Lyle, to just come do at least this.
Just leave your house!
Lyle!
Bring your cat, bro!
Dude, everybody wants to see you do it.
We love you, Lyle!
Yeah, good hair!
Great hair!
Good hair!
It is amazing.
Dude, we can even ride Harleys to the show, dude. Come on.
Seriously, you can bring your cat.
You don't even have to bring gear, Lyle. You don't have to. You can use marks for one song. It's one song, dude. That's it. Anyway,
and this is in October, so I'm pretty sure you can work it out to where you can be there. Lyle.
So we are going to, ideally, it's taking a little bit more. So our guitar player lives in West Virginia, and then like, it's taking a little bit more time than we initially wanted to. But anyways, there's like four songs that were our better songs, but they came after we recorded those other songs.
Yeah.
And we never got to like finish it up and like put it out. So we are now, we're recording those four songs or something, and we're going to add it to the old ones. And we're either going to have like something for everyone that comes through the door to download it for free, or we're going to have a physical copy for everyone. Somehow, some way, everybody that comes to the show is going to get the Etched in Pain album for coming to the show.
Nice.
How many tracks are on that?
It's going to be a total of like the demo, the thing we put out back in the day had three. So it's gonna have those three, plus Step Up, Happiness Died, Everything Inside, and Open Your Eyes. So
seven.
And we may, just for fun, I don't know if we're gonna do it or not, but if there's a possibility we might screw around and record that, you know, funky little Justin Timberlake thing we did at the show with Sean Koss. I don't know.
That was good though with Sean.
Yeah, it was fun is what it was. It was totally not expected, because we never did a cover song. Well, sometimes back in the day we would have singers from other bands. Ryan and I weren't very, I love Chimera, but I never like...
I don't believe they're a real band still.
I didn't know who they were.
So like, back when we were in a band, it was like I never cared to learn the lyrics or something, I don't know, which is weird for me. But anyways, so our band like would, at the end of one of our shows, or a bunch of our shows, they would play Severed, and then like a bunch of different local singers would come up and do the vocals when me and Ryan would go out into the pit, because we didn't know the lyrics. So that's the only thing we ever did as far as a cover song. So when that Justin Timberlake thing came up, I was like, oh shit, man. Who can we get to actually sing? Because I'm not... What I've come to realize... It's funny, like, back in the day, for some reason I can sing in my house alone, and I could sing... We would write a song at practice where no one else was around, and I could sing and be in key. And then, like, as soon as anyone that wasn't in the band, it was like, I was tone deaf and I can't do it, right? Yeah. So, and the worst part is then I went and recorded those tone deaf garbage, you know, stuff, right? So, like, I changed that up for the show. Like, in Perfect on the old recording, there's some singing and it's awful. And when we were, like, going through that to try and relearn it and stuff, as we get that, I'm like, all right, skip this. Like, there's enough of that. Like, get rid of it. So, anyways, I'm like, we're doing Justin Timberlake. There's got to be some sort of singing. And I'm not fucking doing it. So, we're like, what bands used to sing back then? Sean Koss sings. So, that's how he came about. But anyways, yeah, so what you reminded me is that we are recording stuff to hopefully some way everybody gets, you know, a copy of that.
Oh, yeah, that's coming extra through
the
cool, door. Man.
Which hey, I think you should just do the Wu-Tang. Make one copy.
Just one copy?
And then auction
raffle it off?
It would make like $50 million. In all reality,
I'll put in a dollar.
Also, what we're gonna do at this show, we're for my own personal. so what people didn't realize in between us and Caligo at the last show, like we were trying to hurry up off the stage, but we also needed to get a picture of us in front of this cool ass etched in pain banner that I spent a ton of fucking money on.
Yeah,
and left rolled up the whole time we played. The last song, realized that it was fucking rolled up, and I'm like, dude, I spent almost $200 on this banner that's still rolled up. I was like, we're at least getting a fucking picture in front of it, goddammit. Like, rolled it down to take a picture. So maybe we're going to have a cool banner this time if I remember to roll it the fuck down, you know?
Boy, it sucks when you're in front of, like, you know, 300-400 people and you don't have your shit ready.
Yeah. I was going to shit myself the whole time anyway, so I didn't think about... Then Nick Citrone disappeared off the drums and Dylan Roth comes back with him. And
that little round robin they did was cute.
Yeah. That was not... We didn't know, like... I completely...
That's a drummer thing.
It was perfect, though, because I didn't have to do the clean part in Perfect, that song.
Yeah.
Because I turn around and Nick's gone, and I go, oh, shit, what the fuck's going on? Oh, okay, if on the YouTube video of our set, you're like, yeah, I don't know, we just fucked that up, you know, and then Nick just shows back up with Dylan, and they do this drum thing, and I'm like, okay, that just saved the fuck up. Turns out there's no drums in that part of the song, and I just never realized it, and that's how he could get away. But, yeah, so what you were mentioning is Hate Theory put out an album, which is fucking sweet they did that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's good.
They've only played one show since then, isn't it? Didn't they just play that Crowbar show, and then...
Yeah, they played that show, and then Crowbar, and Crowbar was, like, a weird show, you know? Like, I mean, it had a good crowd and stuff, but it was, like... I'll tell you what, though, the dudes in Crowbar fucking loved Hate Theory, you know what I mean? They loved...
They played with them back in the day.
Yeah.
And I remember when they played with them at the Flying Machine, or better known as the Flying Trailer.
Yeah, that fucking place. I fell off the stage there.
At the Flying Trailer?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was Mitch from Spotlight Entertainment. That was his place.
Yeah, I fell into the wooden barricade and finished the song mangled up in the
barricade. Nice.
because the monitor rocked. That's what I get for putting my feet on the monitors.
Yeah, because that was back like when Hate Theory got their bus, which was like an RV.
Yeah, right? I remember and, the and RV. They brought that shit out of the Robin Hood. And shit.
They brought that shit out to the flying trailer, and Kurt was on the bus, fucking drinking PBRs and telling stories about Phil.
Yeah.
And I was sitting next to Latman, who's just like talking back and forth with him and shit. And I'm sitting there like all stoked. You know what I mean? Like, I guess you would be for poisoning the well and shit, but I was sitting there like, I'm fucking hanging out. He's telling
back
stories.
Then, if it was poisoning the well, I would have probably just been crying like a little girl. But
that was like Crush Groove's fourth show was opening up for Crowbar.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Different reaction than what they would have given Hate Theory. Like, they were legitimately, they could tell that we were just like some local kids and this just did not fit the bill, but everybody in our band was so excited to play with Crowbar that we were they'll get behind it and they'll have fun. We still, it's like fourth show. The crowd hated the fuck out of us. Like, if there was tomatoes being sold for $10, they would have sold out of tomatoes and beat the shit out of us with them. But like the dudes from Crowbar and like dude from like Soylent Green, whatever, like they were just like, hey man, like
fucking Soylent Green,
you tried.
I've heard that name.
They're like, you tried. They're like, you tried, man.
Oh,
like,
you gave it your best. You just gave it your all, buddy.
And so like I was just hanging out with these dudes like over in a corner, just wanting to die. Just wanting to die after the worst set ever. And, like, they're just like, hey, man, like, at least you have balls. I remember Kurt going, you got some balls. Going up there, playing for, opening up for Crowbar. You didn't stop halfway through the set. You played your full set. He's like, good job, man. And I was just like, that's fucking.
That was it.
I'll take it. I'll take it.
You fucking.
I was like, that Crowbar didn't say they liked us, but they appreciated the balls on our. We're the band with balls.
Yeah.
We're the band with balls now.
That's how I felt.
Dan called it that fucking moron.
Goddamn moron. Dan Cole. No, we're not talking about him.
Yep. Let's just skip that.
So you guys gonna? I mean, you keep saying never, but you guys are recording shit. Like, do you have the urge to make some new songs? Like,
no.
As an artist, do you feel like you're ready to write some new lyrics? You got some new things as a grown man.
You gotta have some new shit on your head. Like, that's you are living a totally different life than what you were living back then.
I write lyrics all the time, and I don't even know why. Like, I'm just like, that rhymed. I'm putting it on something. You know what I mean? I have no intent on using it, but like.
So our song Happiness Died, I was able to get that out in there, right? Because that song, back in the day. I just always got stuck writing everything, and it was like, dude, there's two singers, like, and Ryan would just it was almost like Ryan felt like I would just my ego would jump in, like I'd just be like, this is what we're doing, you know what I mean?
Right.
So that song in particular, I was like, I'm not touching it. This is your song. You write it. You do. I'm just gonna kind of fill in some spaces here. It's your song. So it never, ever, ever worked out. Like, it just never, we never got it together. So then when we were doing the show, I was like, what was going on with that song, dude? Like, so I just rewrote it. Like, we just couldn't get it together. So I was like, dude, there's been some stuff going on, and there's a kind of a theme to the song, and, like, three of us, since the band's breakup, have lost our moms, and mine was pretty recent, so I was able to, like, some things that I had on my head, and I was able to sort of, I was always been really close with Ryan, so I was, you know, around when his mom was dying and stuff, so I was able to, like, incorporate all of that into the song, and so we're gonna rewrite the one song, like I said, if we can get Lyle Ebach to show up, we're gonna redo that, and so I'll do the same thing. I'm going to rewrite that song. So I have a chance to be a little bit creative and almost write a new song. But there's not, like, my life is just so, it is so different, like you're saying. Like, I love that time of my life. But, like, I don't know that I would, like, want to join a band and, like, write a bunch of songs again. And, like, that's fun to do. And Do I still kind of, like, fantasize about that a little bit? Sure, but it's not like a, like, where Jeff is still, like, Jeff's always in a new band, or he's like writing song, you know, like that type of stuff. Like Jeff's
that dude never stops writing.
Yeah,
he's writing right now.
He's writing like, right now.
Exactly. Like for me, like now life is just about like my business and my dog and my girlfriend and like
both awesome.
You know, yeah. I mean, I have, dude. If you ask me on like a day when I'm not stressed out about work, like to me, I have like the perfect fucking life. You know what I mean? To me, you know, everybody's idea of perfect is different, but...
I mean, outside looking in, you've got a pretty goddamn good life.
Dude. I mean, everybody's got their fucking problems, you know what I mean? But compared to... My life was... Dude, this is what my life had boiled down to after Etched in Pain. My life had boiled down to living in my dad's, like, soaking wet basement on a air mattress that could not keep air in it. And I would, like, end up in a puddle of water... And all I would do is when I woke up, I would run around, sell drugs to get drugs. And, you know, I was a junkie living in, I was so close to death to, you know, that's not my life anymore. And like, my life is completely different as like a business owner and like, you know, just
a partner. I mean, somebody that somebody like, else relies on and
it's
looks
now,
up to.
Now I'm this, you know, I'm kind of, it's hard to say, but like the rock in my family and like,
yeah, your nephews love the fuck out of you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, I'm just in a completely different life than I was back then. So I couldn't write happy songs.
Are you afraid that your life is so good now, comparatively speaking to the life then, that you're gonna end up writing Nickelback shit?
Maybe that's what it is. That's what I'm saying. Like, so Etched in Pain was a bunch of angry fucking kids, and it was my way of getting all this shit. Like, all this shit. This goes into, I wanted the band to be called Everything Left Unsaid, because it was, that's what everything was, you know what I mean? It was, everything in Etched in Pain songs was just everything that I felt I couldn't say to people, but, or how I was feeling, or what, you know, so like, but I could do it if I was drunk and on stage and nobody could understand what the fuck I was saying.
Right.
So I don't know how I would write now. Like, I'm not particularly angry about anything, or, you know, there's things that piss me off. I mean, I'm...
Positivity.
You know.
Power through positivity.
I don't know how to do the hate breed, like, fucking perseverance, like, fucking... positive fucking
beat down. That's positive reinforcement for people that need it.
I don't know how to do that. Like, all I know is pain. Like,
all I know is pain.
I mean, dude, that's just what I know. Like, my whole life was just a fucking shit show from the beginning till, you know, until I got sober.
But there's that big transition from your life is nothing but shit and pain to the life that you've made now.
And I don't know how to write about that, though.
Like,
that's what I mean. So I think
like a life coach, man.
Did being happy kill the creativity, like the need to write shit where it's just like, man, I'm just really just not pissed, y'all. Like, I can only, if it's hard to, because it's hard to do metal if you're not mad.
Somebody said something on Facebook like a month ago that they were having like writer's block.
Yeah.
And it might have been Freely Spoken, who we had on
our badass
band of the week.
Rapping it.
I think he was the one that was like, fucking writer's block, but he had just got with his girlfriend within those few months.
Like,
and he was happy, and I was like, happiness is a motherfucker. And
it is a motherfucker.
It is. Happiness is a bitch.
So yeah, I don't, long story short, I don't fucking want to write Nickelback songs.
I think they're good.
You know? I think Matt, our bass player, is like starting to jam with some dudes. Our guitar player, Eric, who lives in West Virginia, he just started playing drums in some band that, I forget what they're called, but they do like some regional touring type shit, you know, so.
Right.
Ryan wants no fucking part of it. It's a goddamn...
He's too busy like hanging from meat hooks.
Yeah, yeah.
You gotta hang from the meat hooks.
Ryan's like... Ryan fucking, it was ready to shit his pants for 5 months for that show, right? And then when we got done, like even leading up to the show, it was like he was so on eggshells like the whole fucking day. And like when we got done, I was like, it was worth it, right? Like that was fucking fun. He was like, absolutely, but I'm never fucking doing that again, right? So I didn't think we were going to do another one at all, you know? And but then Nick Citrone, I mean, that dude is... That dude is the only reason that Etched in Pain was ever... I mean, as far as musically, that dude is the best fucking drummer I've... I don't know, man. Like,
dude, he's the drummer that, like, anytime anybody would say, you know, we're looking for a drummer, I need a drummer, and it didn't matter what genre of music it was, I was always like, get Nick Citrone.
The last Crush Grip show, Nick could play anything.
Did you?
Yeah.
I mean, we gave dude,
him Nick, Nick can play anything. He's a pro.
He had the idea for the Sexy Back cover, right? And he was like, don't worry, guys, I got this. And he literally, like, starts talking in musician language, which I don't fucking know, right? And he's just, like, telling the guitar players what to do, and, like, musically, all he did was just, like, fucking, you know...
He arranged it.
Like, before he got there and was able to, like, tell that... They had that mapped out and done the, like, the next fucking day, and it was all, like, Nick was the mastermind. Like, that dude musically... And I remember playing with bands back in the day, and, like... They would not be like, oh, man, you guys were, like, good or nothing. They would just be like, dude, you're fucking drummer. That dude is bad as fuck, you know, like. And I would always just be like, I mean, that dude's been in so many fucking bands. Like, there's even, like, he was in Salt the Wound, and then I think he just didn't like the touring sort of lifestyle, you know. Right. Like, and he's, like, played with some national bands, like, Seasons After he did a tour with. They did, like, a cover of the fucking... What's a cry, little sister? Whatever the fuck that is.
I don't remember.
I think it's called Cry, Little Sister or something. I don't know. It was from the Lost Boys movie. Fucking.
Okay, I kind of remember that.
Plays for the Cavs.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, he does the fucking beating on the fucking drums or ladders and fucking
whatever else for the Cavs.
And it sounds fucking sweet. The dude can beat on a fucking ladder and drumsticks, and it fucking sounds good. So,
yep.
I mean, that dude, he's always going to be doing something musically, but like. You know, for me, it's going to be like, dude, you know, I used to be in this fucking band. Like, for me, it was the biggest draw to doing the Etched in Pain thing was to have my nephews there, you know, because I would, like, talk to them about, yeah, I used to be in this band, and they're like, whatever, dude, no, you weren't. And
I understand that feeling completely. Like I have a 12-year-old now who still can't wrap his brain around the fact, like, when we went to that show that was I had awesome, friends... Man. And that those people thought that I was cool. Like, he can't get over that. Like, he's just like, everybody was, like, giving you hugs and, like, talking, saying cool things about you.
Yeah.
He's like, you're the guy who grounded me for being 5 minutes late. Going to the mall.
We need more of that, though. We need more of guys with young kids, like, bringing them and seeing these local shows, and then them, like, telling their friends, and then, you know, that's how it all builds up.
Yeah.
And, like, maybe my nephews, like, dude, so my two nephews came. I have three nephews that I'm really close with. The one wasn't able to come, and I showed him the video, and he just got a phone for the first time, and he, like, calls his mom, doesn't even say nothing to me. He, like, calls his mom right after seeing the video, and he goes, Mom, Uncle Jared's famous. Did you know that? I was like, dude, no. I was like, no, but like, but that's when I saw like your kid there, and he was like pumped to be there, and he had like a party shirt on, and like apparently you guys were talking on here, he loves that band.
Oh yeah.
And it's like, we need that. We need those young dudes to find these bands like The Party, Sweaty Mammoth. To, you know, I want to be, even though I don't drink, so it's not like I'm sitting at the bar drinking, but I want to be that old dude in the back at a local show going like, dude, it's finally back to what it was, you know what I mean? And, like, and all these young fucking kids just having a great time at local shows and building bands up, you know?
I would love to see it again.
Hopefully bands like Sweaty Mammoth, Defy Reality, what, I'm trying to think, I'm drawing a blank now that we're talking about it.
Black the Sun?
Black the Sun, I think you guys have talked about and I listened to. I haven't listened to every, you know, episode you guys have done, you know, you guys aren't that fucking cool yet, but I listened to quite a bit. And
crazy cool enough that you're doing a show.
But there's bands that you guys mentioned. When you guys mention them, I do check them out if I haven't heard them yet. You know what I mean? Like,
well, it's because we don't make up shit.
Like, and we try not to listen to shit.
Yeah, we try like.
If I tell somebody to listen to something, take that shit to the bank. Yeah. Like, fucking listen to it. Open your ears up a little bit.
Because I never want anybody that does listen to the show or that knows me, I don't want anybody to ever be like, oh, you're just a shill for your scene. It's like, first of all, it's not my scene. And second of all, like, there's a lot of bullshit around here that just sucks.
Yes.
It's like, I'm trying to find the fucking diamonds in the rough.
Yes.
And it's not these kids' fault that there's not a billion people coming out to the fucking shows. I mean, even back in our days, like, I played shows for, like, 4 people. You know, like, I played plenty of them. But, like, also, when you play with some of those bigger bands in the scene... like you would have the opportunity. We had the opportunities to be able to fucking, you know, have a good crowd and perform for them. And then all of those bands that were drawing all broke up within like 2 years of each other. They all just were like, we're gone, we're out, we're done. Why? Personal issues, drummer's a dick, whatever it was.
Drugs.
And it was like they were all gone. They just were like, poof, gone, no more Andy, no more Hate Theory, no more, like, it was sad. It was a sad time.
It fell apart really quickly. There was just about four or five bands that, like, just, we actually, our first headlining show was because a band that was sort of a headlining band, like, asked us to play the show, and then, like, a week before the show, they broke up. And we were like, oh, shit, what are we gonna do? And, so then we played the fucking show, and we were like, people still came. And, like, so then we were like, well, can we do that on our own from, you know what I mean? And we it worked out that way that we were able to, you know what I mean? Like, we were able to do 200, I think we sold out the Robin Hood twice right before we broke up. And that was like, well, I mean, it wasn't the Outpost, you know what I mean?
It was right around 200, 225.
But like, then there, you know, there just wasn't bands to, like, when all those bands broke up, because we didn't, I think we actually broke up, like, after doing, like, two or three headlining shows, like, we were done after that.
Like, that's enough.
Yeah, we were like, yeah, fuck this, but then, you know, right after us, Caligo broke up, NDE was done. Hate Theory was pretty much, you know, like I said, I don't remember if they ever, like,
just broke up.
Yeah, they just were done, you know, and, like, and there just wasn't any bands to, I think people still wanted to go to shows, but I think for quite a while, shows just weren't happening.
Yeah, because, you know, the Dolly Trauma guys moved, the Dolly Trauma was gone.
And then now there's bands doing too many shows,
there's too many bands.
Well, and at first it makes sense to do too many shows, because you gotta get that experience, like, you know what I mean? We did every show we could. It's like, just learn how to fucking deal with sound guys and learn how you play at different venues, like, play as fucking much as possible. But, like, after a while, like, you definitely kind of, like, gotta go, all right, I'm not gonna go play fucking Annabelle's for the third week in a row.
Yes.
We're gonna fucking...
Like I mentioned before, we were lucky enough to either be friends with or know, or, like, we had all these shows with these bigger bands. But then even after that, we played... Dude, we played a show on the back of... It was, like, some fucking... I remember someone being like, who the fuck are you guys, Metallica? Like, we fucking played at this giant party out in the fucking sticks somewhere on the back of a fucking flatbed trailer. It was pouring rain, and they built, like, this tarp over top of us. We would just play anywhere. And we were one of those bands. I was just telling dude in a band, this dude Sean, I was like, dude, people used to tell us the same thing I'm telling you right now. Like, stop. If you really want to be a band that draws a crowd, you can't play every fucking show every weekend in the same towns. And, you know, like, they just don't want to hear that. It's like, no, we got to play shows.
No, it's oversaturation.
Yeah. Like, so it went from, like, this great big scene to, like, there were no shows to even go to. And then now it's like there's so many bands. And let's say there's like 100 bands that, let's just take the Outpost for a sample size, all play at the Outpost, not naming any names for that one, but be like, fuck that dude, he's a dick. But let's say there's, out of those 100 bands, there's 10 really good bands, you know what I mean?
Right.
But even some of those really good bands, they just don't know the proper way of, like, they play so often that people get sick of even hearing their name.
Or they're just like, you just kind of don't care. You're like, well, I could go see them this Friday, but they're also playing next Friday, so maybe I'll just go hit
that.
And
that's what kills it.
Yes.
They'll be back around.
But hopefully hopefully bands start to get it. Hopefully people like you are bringing your kids, and your kids are getting interested. Hopefully, you know, there's always those diamond in the roughs that people find. Sweaty Mammoth is fucking awesome.
They really are.
You know,
I,
like,
try not to fanboy out on them. I'm trying so hard.
It took me, like I was telling you guys before we did this, it took a long time. Like, I kept going, I'm going to check them out. And then when I did, I was like, these dudes, they're not bullshitting. These dudes are fucking awesome.
Take it to the bank.
Yeah, you know, and then there's, like I said, I can't think of a ton off the top of my head, but them, The Party, you guys keep saying Black the Sun. I don't remember if I've checked them out
yet. Them kids are so cool.
Curse Them, Life Through Portraits.
Van Evera is really good. Van Evera.
Van Evera.
But some of those bands I just named, there's a show every weekend with them on, and it's like, guys, let's
tone it back a bit.
Yeah, I mean, or at least like go to Cleveland.
Yes.
And then go down to Canton the next week.
Even, dude, Pittsburgh's an hour and a half. Yeah, find a band out there.
Pittsburgh. Like, do that. Like,
pick a town.
Yeah.
Pick a town or four towns.
I'll be back in 6 weeks in this town.
You know, like, down in West Virginia, yeah, Buffalo, Pittsburgh, fucking Detroit, which don't stand outside the venue.
If I could give them any advice, find a band that draws. You know, even if it's 50 to 100 people in 3 to 4 different towns within a couple hours of here, and, like, if you want to play a show every 2 weeks or something, just set them up in those towns. Like,
yeah.
Just not all in the same damn town.
Yeah, play around.
You know? And once you... It's a game of winning. Once you've won over those towns, then... pick a couple other towns, you know what I mean? And then maybe you build up so much steam that you're able to...
Pay your bills,
you know what I mean? Because music's way different now. It used to be like, we just need a record contract and we're going to be fine.
Yeah.
Now you can get a record contract, but they're going to take all your fucking money and you...
You're still going to be broke as shit.
You're still going to be broken.
It's not the 80s.
You maybe even have to pay for your own tour, you know what I mean? So like, but if you do it yourself and you just do like... pick 4 towns, win those towns, and then okay, let's get a little bit further out, and then just keep doing that. Maybe you do it on your own, like, and fucking, you know, the next clutch, who knows? You know what I mean? Doing it on your own and being fucking making money and doing big shit. But you know,
you can't just Facebook shit though. I mean, you have to bring it to the people. And I tell younger kids that all the time. Like, you've got to get on the road.
Fucking Bo from Burn Blue Sky. I know they're a band from 20 years ago, but that dude is still at fucking local shows, standing at the front door, bullshitting, fucking
passing out flyers, talking to people.
Bo's the best.
You know
dude.
What I mean?
Who from one of our favorite podcasts, The Rock Savages?
Yes. That dude. I'm always like. I'm not going to name the name, but there was a local band that fucking, you know, they kept bitching on Facebook about how shitty the music scene is, and it was like...
There's a couple bands that did that, though.
Yeah, but it was like, dude, this is when I maybe just started my business, so I still needed another income, like, working at the Outpost.
Right.
So I was there as often as I could. Like, if Grant wasn't working, I'm like, yeah, dude, let me know. I'll work. I need that $50, you know what I mean? And I would be like, dude... why are you bitching about locals? I'm at every local show, and I don't see you at any of them.
Ever.
You know what I mean? Not even to pass out flyers for your own show. Like, so, you can't just do the Facebook thing and expect people to show up. Go meet people. Build relationships. Do that.
That's the whole, like, building relationships. Like, you don't have to be the greatest musician or singer in the world and shit. Like, if people like you, they're going to come out to your show. If you're a likable persona, people are going to come out.
Yep.
Bobby Clark. People love watching Bobby Clark on stage.
Even if they don't like his music. Even if, like, Bob Clark, for me, their bands like Bob Clark, I don't listen to a lot of bands that do that vocal style, you know what I mean?
Right. Like, the gutturals.
I love Bob Clark, and he's, like, fucking unique, and, like, his vocals, I couldn't do that, you know what I mean? No fucking way. There is, I mean, that dude's a fucking monster. But I always want to go to a Bob Clark show, you know what I mean?
It's hang out with Bob.
When I leave, I'm not putting fucking... Even back in the day when it was Snapdick and, like, other bands that he was in, like, it wasn't like I was even in love with that music and I was going to go home and put that on in my CD player, fucking... But if Bob Clark's band was playing, like, I wanted to go see it.
Right.
I loved Bob, and I can appreciate, like, how good he was at what he was doing. And building relationships with people, that'll be the outcome, you know?
Right.
You'll get people that maybe don't even like your band necessarily, but like you and can appreciate that you're good at what you do, so they're going to come out and support, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Sometimes it's not about, like, you being the best goddamn technical band, you know what I mean?
Or how many likes you have on Facebook.
Yeah, yeah.
I know a drummer in the scene. Maybe you guys are talking about the same dude earlier. I know a drummer in the scene.
His way of talking
shit about other bands is by talking about how many Facebook likes they don't have. Like, man, this band's only got 363 Facebook likes. He's trying to tell me that his band's fucking good. Whatever. My band's got 5,000 bought
But I think Etched in Pain has 33 likes, you know.
I'm not even one of them.
You know?
I'll go like it right
now. Anytime I see that stuff, I'm like, I will find you and punch you in the fucking mouth.
We next time I see that person. I don't know how many Caligo has, but with the two of us, we just sold off the fucking 500 cap club. Is your 5,000 likes going to sell out a 500 cap club? I don't think so.
Dipshit. I think it's a good place to end this off. We got like an hour.
Actually, you know what? Here's what I want, because I know you've got so many of them, and I feel like the show deserves one. That tell me a fucked up story from your drug days. Pick one. Because there's so many fucked up stories.
That involves the band?
If you have one of those. If not, just tell me a crazy fucked up story from when you were on drugs. Because you don't understand, if you meet Jared now, you're not even gonna be able to fucking fathom who he used to be.
Yeah. So I mean, the person I used to be was like this guy, you know, like the it's perfect. Fucking Kitchen Knife Conspiracy's playing. We were playing with Kitchen Knife Conspiracy, and these dudes from New York, and the dudes from New York needed drumsticks, right? Neil. He was like, woke me up at like 10 o'clock in the morning. He's like, let's go get drumsticks. Take me somewhere to get drumsticks. So, we walk out of Woodsy's and there's a bar across the street. And I had recently turned 21 and I was like, let's go have a beer. I know we got this big deal going on tonight, but let's go have a beer. So we sit there for hours drinking. You know what I mean? That's just normal for me. So then, of course, I'm an opiate addict at the time and you know, I'm trying to hide it still, but, you know, so then I, in between the bar and the Robin Hood, I'm at home, snorting Oxycontin, and then we get to the Robin Hood, and the dudes in Kitchen Knife show up, and their singer, John, he knows that I like painkillers, I kept it kind of, knowing, you know, they're just like, oh yeah, that dude likes to take painkillers every once in a while. Select people, man. You know, and it was my birthday, actually, it was my 21st birthday, and fucking John, he's like, hey man, dude, I'm pumped to play with you, and here you go, man. I brought you something for your birthday. And, gives me this whole handful of pills. And I still, to this day, don't know what the fuck they are. But I have a beer in my hand. And the show hasn't even started. And I have a handful of pills. And I just throw the whole fucking handful in my mouth.
Oh, shit.
And fucking chug it down with the beer. And he goes, oh dude, you weren't supposed to fucking take all of them. And I'm like, okay. Well, yeah, dude, it's cool. It'll be all right. So I told you that real cool lineup that fucking played, right? All I remember from that night is, after that is End Face. They had this really fucking sweet song that I went up and did with them before they played with us or before we played. And I remember getting up there and doing that with them and thinking this is fucking awesome, right? I can't wait till we play. And the next thing I know, I'm waking up. It's a really young girl naked in my bed. And apparently, I'd told everybody at the sold-out fucking Robin Hood that we were having a party at my house. And so there was we didn't live far from the Robin Hood, and there was a fucking train of cars all the way to our house. And apparently, there was 80 fucking people smashed in me and Ryan's little tiny duplex. And I was not even, we're having a party! And then the only place I was found was the whole night, everyone... I was passed out in the toilet, in front of the toilet, and no one could move my fat ass, you know what I mean, especially drunk. So all these girls just threw a towel over me and would just fucking use the restroom with me. So all these vaginas right over my face, and just I'm just bad, not even know,
golden,
you know,
shower,
especially
golden,
you know,
shower, just yes, inches away.
Yes, and I, you know, I'm filthy, you know me. I would have been squirt
that over here.
So I mean, that was normal, and it only got worse. You know what I mean? It only got to where I was a shell of a human being that fucking wanted to die. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's where it usually ends up with drugs.
Yeah, yeah. Fucking drugs will kill your band. Drugs will kill you. Drugs will kill
hope?
All of your music.
All of your hope will
everything.
Be gone.
So, kids, if you're listening, don't fucking do drugs.
Yeah.
We'll end it with that. Don't fucking do drugs.
I'll support that. So, yes, October 20th, you got 5 months to make your plans, get your babysitters, Fucking tell your friends. Sweaty Mammoth, Kitchen Knife Conspiracy, The Reunited Skinny Tree, Etched in Pain. Who knows when they're going to play a show again? But there's going to be new music from them. You're gonna get a CD or you're going to get a download code. And fucking Hate Theory, dude. Hate Theory.
Get tickets, because this is going to be one of those shows where, like the last Hate Theory show, where everybody fucking couldn't get tickets at the end because everybody was,
I need tickets.
Yeah, they'll be there. They'll be there. Grant will get me in.
Yeah, Grant will get me in. Jared will get me in.
I swear to God, if you hit me up the day of the show to ask me to get into a show, the answer is no every time.
Everyone, when we sold the tickets for Etched in Pain and Caligo, we like went everywhere driving to the people. I need an excuse to ride my motorcycle, like, pretty much every day.
It's summertime.
Same with, you know, Mark and Ryan in our band. We will just, like, have a fucking caravan of motorcycles and bring you tickets. So don't fucking wait till they're gone, because it's going to be gone. Like, that lineup is...
Yep.
The tickets will be gone. I remember a lot of pissed off people last time they played because they didn't get fucking tickets.
Once this will be simultaneously announced... as far as when tickets are on sale, so don't fucking wait.
Go get them now. $10 now, right? 15 day of show.
Something
if
like
it
that.
Makes it there.
I don't. Is that what
$10.
Yeah. $10. I don't even fucking know.
That's a hell of a show for $10.
Yeah.
Can't beat it. So get your fucking tickets.
What night is that? October 20th. Is that a Friday or Saturday?
Saturday, I believe.
Saturday, October 20th. 4962 State Route 43. It's at the Outpost. Get your asses out there. It's going to be one hell of a fucking show.
And go to some local shows in between now and then. Yeah,
for sure. Blackout Cookout, September 9th.
Ooh, my favorite show. Every year. Every January, I'm like, so when's the barbecue happening?
You're just fat.
I know! I don't work out all the time!
It's all right. I'm fat, too. Bring the barbecue.
Thanks so much, Jerry.
Yeah, thanks for stopping by, dude. It was fucking...
it was great.
The end of the show song, the part that's never on TV. I'm just wasting the studio audience's time now. Everybody wants to leave and go get a drink, but they can't, cause I'm singing a song that goes on and on. Sabaraba.
This has been a Lousy Weather Media Network production. Find new episodes and archives at lousyweathermedia.com.